Hey everyone, it's Billy Morrison and Ozzy Osbourne here. Our new show, The Madhouse Chronicles, is dropping this April. Join us as we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Visit osbournemediahouse.com for early access. What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
Oh,
you're in the madhouse now.
Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we get to sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players and related music industry experts. If you love playing guitar, stick around. You're in the right place. Hey, this is Craig Garber. When I'm not interviewing world-class guitar players, I'm busy helping clients with their marketing. In fact, since March of 2000, I've helped over 300 clients in 108 different industries all over the world sell everything from $20 books to $5,000 seminar seats and everything in between. I even authored a marketing book called How to Make Maximum Money with Minimum Customers. And now, I'm giving away a free marketing strategy session to business owners who qualify. On this call, we'll discuss what's currently working in your business, specific sales and marketing problems you're struggling with, and I'll identify specific strategies you can use to overcome these problems and increase your cash flow. To find out if you qualify and to book your free marketing strategy session with me, go to everyonelovesguitar.com/marketing right now. Again, to book your free marketing strategy session with me, go to everyonelovesguitar.com/marketing right now. Thanks for listening. Now let's get on with the show. Hey, everybody. This is Craig Garber from Everyone Loves Guitar with a fantastic guitar player today with Camille Nelson. She's got a really unique, very cool style of playing. She's actually a guitarist and a violinist specializing in acoustic-driven folk music. She's been in the music industry for over 8 years, and she released her debut album, First Words, on Dimmy Records in 2009. And she recently signed with Stone Angel Music and just released her second studio album called Lead Me Home in August of 2017. She blends elements of folk, classical, bluegrass, and new age music, and on Lead Me Home, it's very relaxed, intricate acoustic guitar melodies, both traditional and original hymns, accompanied by a string ensemble with guest artist Stephen Sharp Nelson of the Piano Guys, Alex Sharp, formerly of the Celtic Woman, and Ryan Shoup of Ryan Shoup and the Rubber Band. Those names are all like almost the same. How is that even statistically possible?
I don't
Sharp,
know.
Shoup, and Sharp. Wow.
Hey, that's true. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, and I'm not that sharp, so I'm struggling with all this. Camille's got a unique technique, actually, where she uses a lot of guitar percussion in her playing. It's extremely heartfelt. She's really passionate when she plays. You can see that, and it comes across. And her unique style enhances her melodies and compositions. She was born and raised in Salt Lake City, and she's the youngest of six talented and musically inclined siblings. Her dad was a violinist.
No, he's a violist.
Oh, a violist. That is correct. Her dad's a violist. Right. Because viola. Right. I've never even written that word before. Her dad is a violist and her mother. I've butchered this up already. I'm sorry, Mr. Nelson. You are a violist and I'm sure a darn good one. And her mom was an opera singer, both heavily influencing Camille's pursuit and interest in music and performance. In addition to family, Camille draws musical and creative inspiration from her travels abroad. This is really cool. She's visited more than 70 countries and speaks German and Italian. Drawing from a deep respect for and admiration of diverse global cultures, she also integrates a unique multicultural perspective into songwriting following years living in South Africa, Germany, Switzerland, and Italy, prior to and while pursuing her master's degree at the University of Utah and Utah State University, and later her PhD at Gonzaga University in Spokane, Washington. She also lived in Nashville for a couple of years, working with various artists to help build her musical skill set. She's currently teaching graduate courses in management, communication, and leadership while pursuing her career in music with the hopes of motivating and moving others through the power of song. And she also does public speaking, which we'll talk about later on as well. She's got a lot going on, and she's obviously a very interesting and diverse background, and I've been looking forward to talking with her for a while. So thanks, Camille. I appreciate you coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you, Craig. Thanks for having me on the show.
So your YouTube videos are like really well done. Like old school professional MTV videos, sort of. Like they look like they're big budget production.
Wow. But
they do. They like you have. I think it's like drones flying all over. Like you know, it's just. I was curious. Do you have like a team that helps you do that, or is that the record label, or do you make those?
I've got nothing to do with it, so I cannot take credit for any of that. But it's Elias Jessup. He's an incredible videographer. He's just about 23, 24, something like that. But he is absolutely incredible. But each of those videos were really made on pretty much a shoestring budget, to be honest. So I'm glad they look like these big Hollywood productions and things, but we budgeted them out really well. And, even the one we did in Ireland, I mean, that was probably one of the cheaper videos, and that was quite the story. So
yeah, they're great. And the engineering and the music's really clean on there. I mean, they look like big budget stuff. So good for you.
Oh, well, thank you. Thanks.
Also, I noticed in most of your videos, you know, you have a lot of wide open space, whether it's outdoor ones, clearly, you know, vast open spaces, but even the ones that you have where it's indoor, like aesthetically, very clean lines. And, you know, there's a lot of room and space. And I was wondering, like, what your connection to like space or, you know, nature is, because this is a very common theme if you watch them.
You know, that is such an interesting, profound question. Honestly, way to go, Craig. Like, you're so deep.
Don't worry, I'll screw this up sooner or later. I promise.
Yeah, those people down there in Florida are like thinkers, you know?
Right? Definitely not.
I have never thought of that, but now that you think about it, you know, I've grown up always with a kind of a distracted mind, you should say. Like I'm always thinking, I was thinking about 12 things, and you know, I'm organized in some ways. Like I'm organized, yeah, in some ways, but disorganized in a lot of ways. And I would say music is the one thing that takes me away, that clears up all the clutter, that clears up just all of the distraction, all the disruption that I do have in my mind with all the clutter and all the distractions, all the other things I'm thinking about. And so thinking about that, and you're so intuitive, I think that's really interesting. But I think we didn't do that on purpose in any of the videos, but now that I think about that, music is what brings me to those open spaces. It opens up my mind, opens up my creativity, and helps me get away from just all the natural distractions that we all tend to face in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. Even like you could tell, like even you have ones that are indoors, like you're moving around, you're flowing around. It's just like you seem very content with that big, you know, when you have all that space around you.
So, yeah. Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, it's hard not to be. I mean, like I said, I was just up in New York last week, and I love being there. But that being said, the thing I had mentioned to my wife is, man, I could never live here. I like my space. You know, I go there for a month probably, but I need a little bit of, you know, something. I need a backyard or something. Yeah, space.
I'm the same way. I couldn't live in a downtown. I couldn't really live in a big city like that. Like, I do need my space. I do need my alone time. So, yeah.
Is that a drone that captures all those rolling hills and trees?
It is. Well, actually, it was me up in a little plane. No, I'm totally kidding.
No.
That would be awesome. You know, there I am paragliding. That would be fun. But yeah, that's all Elias Jessup and his drone skills. He has some pretty mad drone skills. And he just did that. I think he did that on all the videos pretty much, but he does a fantastic job. He's so talented at that. So. Well,
what's really funny is like, cause I'm 54, so I'm much older than when a drone came around. So my first instinct is like, I have to reprogram my mind. I'm like, oh wow. No, that's not a plane. You know, like, of course it's not a plane. And, you know, it's like, you know, I didn't grow up with drones or anything like that. So I know it's not a plane, but that's your first, you know, your knee jerk mind anyway reaction. It's like, whoa, there, and it's helicopter or something? No, it's a drone. But it looks great.
I thought the same thing as well when music videos first started. I was like, wow, that is a stable plane. Mm. You know? It's like so smooth and...
Yeah.
So I thought the exact same thing.
You're the youngest of six. What was that like? That must have been adventurous.
That was adventurous is the perfect word. Yeah, it was fun. It was, and we're all loud and fun and love to laugh a lot. And so the household was, and we're all musical. And so home was pretty loud, I would say, a lot of the time. You know, whether we're quoting movies or whether we're playing music or whether we're playing sports or just talking to each other. You know, if you ever come to a family party, even today, it's pretty loud.
That's great.
We can all get pretty rambunctious. So,
did any of your siblings become musicians as well?
Yeah. And so my oldest sister plays the piano. I believe we all sing. And my older brother plays piano. And then my older sister Kath, she sings and acts and plays. And so she's actually in the play Steel Magnolias right now as Weezer. And at Covey Arts Center down in Provo.
Very cool.
And cannot wait. It's running all month. So yeah, for those out in Utah, you've got to go see it. So I can't wait to see it. I actually have been out of town, so I'm seeing it next week. But then my next brother, Matt, plays the violin super, super well. He's featured on the album Lead Me Home. He played in the string ensemble. And then my brother Steve plays a cello in a group called the Piano Guys. And so, yeah. And then I grew up, we all grew up playing music and have all done different things with it, I guess you could say.
And so all you guys are into, outside of piano, it's all string instruments?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, the youngest three string instruments, and then the oldest three, they focus more on piano, I would say.
Very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Both of your parents are musicians. Were they full-time professional musicians, or did they have like a career and musicians?
Yeah, they had. So my dad was an ophthalmologist. He was an eye physician and surgeon, and played viola on the side and played in orchestras growing up and things. And my mom was an opera singer, and she, I don't know if she ever really did that full-time. I mean, she did that for quite a while before I was born, but she was also a sixth grade teacher. Hmm. So she was a elementary school teacher, and she did that. And she absolutely loved that. I knew, I have to think she was really good at it too. So
did she, you have to really project your voice to sing opera.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Was she like an intimidating, like one of those intimidating voices, like when she was angry with you or your brothers or sisters or anything?
Come here.
Yeah, right. That's a, like.
there's something called dramatic sopranos and then lyric sopranos, and you're definitely going to know the difference. I mean, the dramatic tend to have like the bigger voices. And just overall more dramatic, and then the lyrical just tend to have a lot sweeter voices. They can project their voices as well, but they just tend to be just more lyrical, just like the name is. And she was a lyrical soprano, and so she just had such a sweet and tender voice, but she had a very sing-song like laugh. Whenever she would laugh, and sometimes when she would speak, I could hear her singing voice through her voice.
That's really cool.
Which was really fun. And she was great.
Very cool. So how did you chose guitar? Did you learn to play from a family member?
Not really. I started violin when I was 5, and then I started guitar when I was 15. And I think my brother was playing classical guitar around the same time that I was starting to play the harp. And my dad, the harp was one of my favorite instruments. And so decided to start that. And my dad was like, okay, we'll see how long this goes, you know, after my 2-week flute stint and who knows what else. And so he was so, so kind. And he rented a harp for 3 months.
Oh, wow. That is really cool. That's a hard instrument to play and a big instrument too, isn't it?
And he found a teacher. So I ended up taking lessons. And at the end of the 3 months, I think I remember seeing my brother play or hear him play the classical guitar. And I just had some little side comment to my dad saying, hey, you know what? The guitar kind of sounds like the harp. And he took that moment and ran with it. He was like,
we need to get rid of this harp out of the living room.
3 minutes later, I saw the salesman with, pitching me with some PowerPoint, like, you better believe, and you can like go to the campfires with your guitar and it's portable. You won't have to have me to lug your harp around. I mean, it was so great. It was so cute. And I mean, within 50 minutes, and I don't even exaggerate, like, I pretty much think we were at the music store and back at my house, having returned the harp and with a guitar in hand. And my dad was really supportive of what I wanted to do, even though it might have sounded crazy.
That's so really cool. How do you even return a harp? You can't put that in your trunk. I mean, like, what do you do? You have flatbed truck or something?
Exactly. I mean, it was like a mid-size harp because at the time I think it was, 14, 15. So I wasn't totally, totally full grown. And I'm a short person anyway. And so I think it was like a mid-size harp. So it fit in the back of our van at the time. Yeah. So he was able to fit it in. And
that's right. Six kids. You got to have a minivan or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
ding.
You got to have a big, got to have a big car somewhere. So
very cool. And how did you develop like your percussive style? It's really unique. It's not like you don't learn that. Say, hey, could you, you develop that on your own? How did you do that and why?
Yeah. So one of my best friends, I'll never forget, she came over to my house. This is probably, 10 years ago. And she came over to my house and she's like, you've got to see this. You've got to see this video. And it was this video of Andy McKee. Hmm. And he's a pretty prominent fingerstyle guitarist. And it was his video Drifting, which is a really iconic song in the fingerstyle genre. And I'll never forget looking at that and just being completely glued and almost obsessed with it, enough that I went back home, or I just went downstairs to my guitar and I was like, I'm going to learn this song. And I totally stayed up the whole entire night, just looked at his fingers, looked at the video over and over and over again. I memorized it, learned how to play the whole thing in a night, just because I thought it was so cool integrating so many different things. And it kind of worked well with my brain, and that I just, I'm so distracted anyway. I have so many things going on that it was like, well, if we're playing the guitar, why don't we drum on it as well? And why don't we sing as well? Or, so I think it just interested me right from the get go. And then I learned that there were some other players, Antoine Dufour, who was a big player in that era, and Michael Hedges, who started that whole genre of that. So, and my brother-in-law got me into Michael Hedges as he opened for some band at some concert that he played at. So,
and then you enjoyed it and you stuck with it and you made it your own.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel that, in being able to use the guitar kind of in a dual purpose, that not only musically your catalog is broader and your selections are broader, what you can deliver is broader, but do you find, like, expressive wise that, hitting, that's like, sounds tawdry, that using the instrument percussively in addition to strumming on it gives you more outlets for expression?
Absolutely. Cause I think there's so many different ways that you can express things just verbally. And I think just being able to play the guitar, whether it's strumming or singing along with it, I think there's emotion in all of it. And so I think it all brings out emotion differently.
But okay. So let me ask this. I'm getting a little ahead of myself, but you teach courses in communication. Are you by nature a good verbal communicator go ahead.
I can be, and I can't be, meaning that sometimes in personal relationships, sometimes I do have a hard time being direct. Yeah. And in more professional settings, I sometimes have an easier time. So I can be, when it comes to emotions, I'm much better at communicating my emotions. You know, if I'm sad or if something makes me feel, but if it's something that upsets me, it probably will take me longer to get out, and it probably won't come out as eloquently. So yes and no, I'm a good, I would say yes and no.
But when you pick up a guitar, does that change? Like, can you be the, you know, more direct through your instrument?
Absolutely. Huh. Absolutely. I feel like I communicate through music much better than I do through words, for sure.
Mm-hmm. That's not uncommon, you know, for a lot of musicians. And thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
So you've traveled to 70 countries. What's the backstory to that?
You know, I think Italy was the first place I went when I was 18 or 19, and I caught the travel bug. My goodness, I loved traveling. I loved discovering other cultures and finding more about myself through other cultures.
Sure.
And at the time I was learning Italian, and I love learning other languages. And then I learned German after that, and I've just, you know, learned some other languages since. And I think it helps keep me humble, just learning how big the world really is, but also just how other people live their lives, you know. And I think I learn a lot about myself and a lot about other people that way. And so it expands my own ability to communicate. And I never really remember sites or dates too well. Like whenever I've been sightseeing, like in other countries, like I don't really remember sites or dates super well, but I do remember connections. Like I remember people I'll meet or moments we've shared. And so that's probably my favorite thing just about traveling, is just connecting with the people.
It's interesting. I'm kind of the same way. I have a great memory, but I don't necessarily remember, like even a movie. Like I won't remember I'll remember the feeling I had, but I won't remember what happened in the movie necessarily from a while ago. And I'm like that with people, like, cause I interview so many people and people say, well, what did so-and-so say? And sometimes I'm embarrassed. I don't remember, but it's not possible. I've interviewed 250 people in the last like 8 months. I can't remember. I mean, it's not possible, but I always remember the connection. I always like, okay, the vibe. You know that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That I mean,
you're always going to remember that feeling. That's always going to stay with you.
Yeah, that's very interesting. You know? So, what's your favorite and least favorite place you visited? And when I say least favorite, so not in a you know, a derogatory way, but like odd way, or you don't even have to answer that if you don't want to say least favorite. But you know. Anyway,
I would say, you know, Antarctica was just really, really super surreal. Of course, that's going to come up in my mind just because it was something unlike any other experience I've ever had. And I remember when I was there, I was just like, this is just so surreal. Like, I can't believe we're here. And it was something like I had never, ever, ever experienced before. And again, it reminded me of how small I am and how big the world really is. And so, so in that way, I really, really loved Antarctica. But as far as like my least favorite place, that's actually a really good question. I'm trying to even think of that. If I think of like a least favorite place, it will probably be like a nightmare travel story, you know?
Yeah, okay, I get you. I totally
and
get
when
it.
I think of that, it was probably, you know, either getting stuck in the airport, in the JFK airport for 4 days, you know.
Oh, my God. Like that. Was that true? Did you get stuck at JFK for 4 days?
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Oh, my God. What happened?
It was pretty bad. Well, I was on the way back. Well, just one word or just one, you know, buddy pass. That's just something I'll never do again. And so.
What happened?
I was on a buddy pass. So what? I was on a friend's buddy pass.
What is that?
Got it. It's a free ticket on an airline. Like if someone works for an airline, they can give you a buddy pass.
Okay.
And that's like basically like a free ticket on like a flight or something. But the thing is, you have to wait to be
leftovers.
Yeah, like all the leftovers. And so I was on the way back from a work trip from San Juan, which is from Puerto Rico, and my friend and I got stuck in New York. We finally got a flight out, like, to Reno, and then it was just kind of...
You were there for 4 days in an airport?
Yeah, I mean...
What did you possibly do?
I guess it was like a four-day travel kind of thing, and then we got food poisoning, I did anyway, from, like, the sandwich that I ate from one of those delis, and...
God, that's horrible.
And so when I think of, like, my least favorite travel experience, even though I was with one of my best friends and she made it hilarious, she made it such a good experience because of how optimistic and hilarious she is, that's probably... Maybe top of my list.
Yeah, I can't blame you. Oh, so you basically had to hang out there and you couldn't leave because you were waiting to see, maybe the next flight.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Holy crap. That sucks. Well, I'm sorry you had to deal with that.
Oh, yeah. Well, and we were trying to make like a friend's wedding and it kept getting delayed and gosh. So it was kind of a nightmare, but it makes for a really funny story, I'd have to say. So
give you credit. You pursued your graduate and your master's degree as an adult. Is that correct?
I did. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What made you go back to school to do that? I really give you a lot of credit. And what did you get? Like, I think I read something. You put a post on Facebook at some point in time, last 3-4 months, and you said, "Oh, a year ago I got my degree," and you could just tell that you were really proud of. You know, that accomplishment, it was special for you. And I was curious, what made that, like, what made you go back and do that? What were you looking for?
Yeah, I think, I was never a really good student in high school, but I all of a sudden caught this vision of learning in college. And it was almost like this obsessive learning. Like, I just couldn't learn enough. And I kept going to school and kept taking class after class. And it wasn't until I got to do my master's in second language teaching that I taught German. And so when I was teaching, I just loved the whole idea of teaching, loved the flexibility that it allowed. And I kind of got this vision of, I kind of like the life of a professor. You know, it's kind of nice. They are pretty flexible and they have a lot of freedom in their schedule. And so I kind of thought about that, but you need a PhD to teach full time. And I'm always one who just has followed my heart. And just for some reason, I just felt like I needed to keep going to school. And so I get my PhD in leadership studies. And I tell you, I mean, it was one of the hardest things I've ever done. But after finishing it, I learned a lot about myself and that, because I would finish it and people were like, "Oh, you got your PhD, you're so smart, blah, 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 you're so intelligent." And it really wasn't about that, like, at all. Like, all those comments kind of would take me back. So I'm like, I never even thought of it that way, but I thought of it as, like, the degree took nothing but diligence and determination and just perseverance, if anything. And so, if anything that school has taught me, it's just a greater capacity to persevere and that you can really do anything you can do as long as you're determined. So
I think that takes a lot of what's the word I'm looking for? Not discipline, but conviction to just follow. Like, it sounds like you just got a voice that said, "Hey, I got to do this, and I'm not really sure why, but this is probably going to be important to me, so let me do it." And I'm enjoying it. It's even though it's difficult, it's not a grind. I think that takes a lot of credit. What did you said you learned a lot about yourself? What was it, the thing that you could do whatever you want?
Yeah, it was that, and that I also had a lot of self-discipline that I didn't know I had. I mean, growing up, I never had like a true, I guess I just wasn't a really good hard worker, but I learned what a hard worker I was and just how much self-discipline I was able to have, and just the determination I had of going after something that I wanted.
Well, congratulations. But it's always interesting to, when you meet somebody, you think, that's the way they've been. Like, I just assumed you were a really hard worker because you got your hands in a lot of things. I figured, oh, she's always been like that. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting when you hear sometimes about somebody that they weren't like that at all, because it's hard to imagine. Yeah, I mean, I don't know you well at all, of course, but it's hard to imagine that you weren't a hard worker, because you just, like, your work ethic is you know, oozes out of you. You seem like that's your thing, your work ethic. Mm-hmm. I always find it interesting when I'm, you know, the people grow and change, you know,
absolutely. I'm definitely not the same person in high school, like, at all. In fact, I was kind of a lazy kid growing up, I would say. So,
yeah. Well, good for you. Mm-hmm. How do you, I know that you sort of integrate music into some of the courses you teach, the management, communication, leadership. And I was curious how you do that.
And so I integrate music more probably into speaking more than anything. If I integrate it into courses, it's probably about concepts of music that I can apply in the leadership realm. Whether it's like songwriting or theory that might be applicable in the leadership field. But how I apply music the most is in speaking, when I do speaking engagements, whether it's at high schools or at colleges or at businesses. That's when I integrate singing or playing or just talking about music in general. So
very cool. You mm-hmm. lived in Nashville at one point. What prompted that move and what made you leave?
I did. Yeah. Again, kind of following my heart. I'm not going to lie. I moved back to Salt Lake after I finished my PhD, and I just had this great desire to do music again. And I was taking from a vocal coach from Nashville at the time. And I just had this opportunity to go down there and stay in a house for free and kind of give the whole Nashville a good try. And so I just took that opportunity and went down there and absolutely loved it. Fell in love with the city, fell in love with the people.
People are great.
And the whole culture, the whole music, and just went from there. So just ended up staying for a bit.
How long?
I stayed for about a year and a half.
Cool. So, yeah, I think it's a very unusual in that everybody's so supportive there.
Oh, so supportive. Yeah, and it tremendous. Kind of blew me away. And that it's a culture, or it's a place where, I mean, you have some of the best musicians in the world, and I've never felt more supported.
Yeah, it's very weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
What are some of the bigger obstacles you've had to overcome throughout this journey, either music-related or business or personal?
I think growing up, I would say my mom was pretty ill a month before I was born, my mom got ill. And so she had a brain tumor for about 18 years.
Oh my God.
Over those 18 years, it was kind of like, just slowly seeing someone slip away. You know, she lost her voice, lost her hair, lost a lot of that. But again, I mean, it was just really inspiring to see her live and to see how optimistic she was and everything. And so, so that was really hard, just seeing that throughout my life, but it probably inspired, it definitely inspired like my music and songwriting growing up, just because it was a way of catharsis or therapy, I guess you could say. And then, my mom passed away when I was 17. And then 3 months later, my dad remarried a woman, and then she got cancer and lived with cancer for 12 years. And so 17 years later, she passed away. And then my dad remarried pretty soon after that. But other than that, I mean, it's probably just as far as obstacles, it's been probably obstacles I've placed in my life, whether it's sporting events, or, you know, school, putting myself through rigorous programs and things, but also a lot of chronic pain. So I've had a lot of injuries, just back, neck, hip injury, and so I deal with a lot of chronic pain, and so a lot of that is just managing that and learning how to deal with just daily headaches and daily stuff like that. So
wow, that is intense.
Yeah.
Yeah, pain is so much energy to manage. I mean, it's just, it's obscene. It's ridiculous.
Oh, it really, really is. It really is. And I mean, trying to act normal, like in a social scene when you have a migraine, is just a whole job in itself, you know?
Does music help you with that at all?
It can kind of distract me from back pain or hip pain, I would say. But, yeah, I mean, a lot of times, I mean, I take baths probably once or twice a day, just Epsom salt and things. Yeah. And I listen to a lot of music, and that can, I think that's part of just healing and in general. But so I would say music is definitely helpful for sure.
Yeah. Wow. So this is just a condition you have to deal with. There's no like origins, or it's not from a specific industry. It's industry injury. It's just something that you have to deal with on a regular basis.
Yeah. Well, I sprained my neck about 4 years ago, 3-5 years ago, 2013. Yeah. And so I sprained. And so I just deal with a lot of nerve pain and a couple of herniated discs there. And then, just have a back herniation. And so just deal with that and just sciatica. And then my SI joint popped out doing sports. And so I just have a lot of hip pain and
holy crap.
But I can still do stuff. I mean, I can't run marathons anymore.
Or shucks.
Really? Yeah. I mean, I kind of had to retire from that. But, you know, a wise leader actually in my church once gave some really good advice as far as just not being able to do things anymore. And he said, you know, he said physical disabilities are ways to see enlightenment in others' areas, you know, kind of meaning that just like when you get injured, it creates focuses, it creates a focus in other areas. And so when I was unable to, you know, I ran my last marathon in New Zealand 2016. That will probably be the last one I'll ever do in my life. But
that's so cool that you say that. I ran my last marathon in New Zealand in 2000. That's just like very cool thing.
It was honestly the prettiest place to run a marathon ever. And I was injured then, so I had to walk the whole entire thing pretty much. But it was the perfect one to walk through just because it was just so beautiful. Mm. But, it's created a greater focus in music, I would say. Cause ever since, I mean, the hip injury I had was probably 2014 or so. And that's when I had an even greater focus in music. And so.
Wow. Good for you. I wanted to say something to the listeners that a conversation that I had with Camille, like right before we started. And I'm like even more blown away now. I said, you know, we're Facebook friends. And I said, I'm so impressed with you because you always go out of your way to have fun. And you're always like doing things that make you happy. And in light of what you just said, I'm even like more blown away because you have people like, you know, you're dealing with constant chronic pain, which totally sucks. And you have every reason, quote unquote, if you to just sit and say, oh, I can't be happy or I can't have fun. And here you are. I'm like blown away, man, because like I said, I'm so impressed by you're always having fun. You're always smiling. You're always with other people. And anybody who like is down about stuff, I think you really need to give it a good long look because, you know, most people aren't dealing with what you're dealing with on a daily basis. They're just bitching and moaning about stuff, you know? So,
well, I've done plenty of that as well, you know?
I'm sure. Yeah. But you know, and that's allowed, you know, but you got to move on at some point in time and say, shit, you know, I mean, I could do this and forever. And is it going to change my situation? No. So that's really good. I really have a lot of credit.
Thank you, Craig. That means a lot. That really does. Thank you.
Thanks for sharing that. That was very brave of you.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this. If you can go back and give advice to your younger self now that you're older and wiser and having been through all this crap, what would you have told yourself?
Well, maybe just because something doesn't work doesn't mean that you have to stop trying, I think. I think that's especially true just in the artistic space. just because you just have to keep on trying at things and trying at things. And I tell you, a movie that most inspired me lately was one called Loving Vincent.
What's that about? And
it was the most impressive movie I've seen in a long time, because it's the first movie that's ever completely drawn. And it's a movie about Vincent Van Gogh, and they took 100 artists who are fans of his work and can draw in his style, and the whole entire movie is just completely drawn. You're going to have to see it. But the guy, Vincent, was a powerhouse of a human being, I tell you, because he dealt with daily criticism. And the guy only started painting when he was 27, 28, and he dealt with criticism all the time, and everyone saying how horrible he was, even these big mentors and everything, but he just kept on going because he loved to paint. And so if I were my younger self, and I feel like I've genuinely followed my heart a good part of my life, but
seems like that
it would just be like, if it's in your heart, then if it's in your heart, then it's still in your heart. And just to not doubt that. And just like Vincent did, like if it's something you love, by all means, do it with all your heart, because it's in your heart. So
I think that's great advice. And I have done the other part, and it's not that good. You know, I've done business projects because I think this will work, or I think this will make me money. And sometimes it does, but it's never, there's never any fun or, you know, passion underneath it. You know, I've done other things that I have enjoyed, but when I haven't, it's never good, you know? So I agree with that. Hey, I am not an acoustic guitar guy, so I can't talk about your guitars, but I was curious if there are any cool or interesting stories behind how you acquired any of the guitars that you have.
Yeah. Well, the one that I have, that is the first guitar. It's not the first guitar I ever got, but it was a guitar I got when I was 15, and it's a Taylor 714 CE, and it's a, it's custom made. So it has a 12 string neck instead of a 6-string neck. So it has a wider neck, and I just love that, especially for finger style. It kind of gives a little bit more flexibility in the fingers and just open space again with the open space. Yeah. Right. And, then
where'd you get that? Your dad got that for you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Was that the 50-minute music thing?
Not quite. I think I got a Washburn that time. It was okay. He's like, well, let's see if this is going to last, you know? And once he knew I was super serious about it, I got a good guitar for I believe it was my 15th or 16th birthday. Then the other guitar I got almost exactly a year ago, and it's a Stonebridge guitar, a Furch. They're made in Czech Republic, and it also has a 12 string neck, so it has a wider neck. And then they let me pick all the woods on there. And it was the first instrument that I partnered with, meaning they just gave me like a really good.
So it's like a signature. Is that a signature?
Not really a signature, but they I partnered with them, and that they just kind of signed me on as one of their Stonebridge artists. Just gave me
that's great.
A good artist discount, which is great. That was the first time that had ever happened. So they let me pick all the wood.
You've arrived.
I've arrived. There we go, Craig. I've arrived. And the back of the guitar is flames maple. Or wait, quilted maple, I believe. And it is just, I almost want to hang the guitar up just turned around, because it's just so beautiful.
Yeah, quilted maple is real pretty.
Yeah, oh yeah, so you know all about it. But other than that, and then the butterfly I use as my artist logo just has significant meaning to me. So they put that on the 12th fret. And so
that's very cool.
That's been a really cool guitar.
How'd you get, if you're comfortable, if you're not, that's totally cool. What the butterfly thing, where'd that come from?
Yeah. So my mom, she was an opera singer, and she, Madame Butterfly was her main role.
Oh, okay.
And
that's so cool.
She really instilled a love for music in our family. And so whenever I see butterflies, it always reminds me of my mom, but also the powerhouse that butterflies are, you know, I mean, they really overcome a lot. And they, you know, coming out of their cocoon and the whole, the way in which they evolve and continue to evolve. And so I sell these necklaces just on my site. They're butterfly necklaces that were made, and on the back of them is just etched in evolve. And which I think is such a beautiful concept and word, and that we are never completely fully evolved. We just continue to evolve throughout our lives. Just like a butterfly continues to shed itself throughout its life. And just like we do, you know, I mean, I'm not the same person I was last year or 5 years, 10 years, 15 years ago. So we just continue to evolve. And that butterfly is a reminder of me that, it, you know, even though I make mistakes and even though I'm not perfect right now, I don't need to be because I continue to evolve. But also that butterflies look like angels. And so we all have guardian angels around us. And my mom is my guardian angel. And so, so that's the meaning behind that.
That's so cool. Wow. That's really nice. Yeah. Thank you.
Oh, well, thanks. Yeah, sure.
Wow, that's so sweet. I'm a little taken aback. That's just very nice. I'm glad you got all that stuff going on there. Yeah, then there's a lot of people that never evolve.
Yeah,
you know, like
yeah,
the same exact person they were like 40 years ago. Like,
no,
oh my
totally.
God.
Well, it's such a prevalent topic today. Change management is one of the main topics I talk about, whether it's in speaking or whether it's in the courses that I teach. And it's become a greater topic today because of technology and how it's evolved companies or how it's forced companies to adapt, but how companies have chosen to adapt or either not to adapt. I mean, Blockbuster Video is a good example. I think they said years ago, oh, you know, we'll never have to evolve. We're always going to remain the video store.
Yeah.
Here they have one remaining store in the entire world.
I'm surprised they even have one.
Yeah, me too. I think it's kind of an iconic store, and they're trying to hold on to it. And I think the town just loves it, you know, because of its sake of oldie.
Who's they?
I don't know, but
so they. I guess they're selling DVDs and or renting DVDs. Is that what it is?
Yeah, probably video cassettes.
Who has a VHS player even anymore?
I know, right? And so DVDs will probably eventually become obsolete, which is digital stuff.
Sure.
So I think just companies like that, and they fail to adapt, and so there's a lot of room for talk of change management and how to change and how to adapt. And Starbucks, Southwest are amazing. Netflix, I mean, all stellar examples of change management.
So. That's really good that you, it's interesting talking to you because you're like a broad background. You can switch from like music to sort of business to speaking. And I think all those things are really cool. I'm interested in all those different things. So it's cool.
Cool.
If I asked you to pick your top three Desert Island Discs in no particular order and knowing that this can change tomorrow, what's like your knee-jerk reaction?
Ooh,
top three Sting. CDs.
Sting, without a doubt. My number one favorite song in the entire world is Why Should I Cry for You by Sting, which is just such a beautiful song. And so I think I would have to say, it's not on the same. I would probably do Sting Live in Berlin.
Okay.
His live version of Why Should I Cry for You is just, I cry every time I hear it. It's so beautiful. So I would say that for sure. And the other one, ooh, this is kind of tricky. But Sarah McLachlan is one of my favorites. She's been a huge influence as well
beautiful.
As along with Morissette. Yeah.
Beautiful voice.
I agree. Completely agree. So her Illusion CD got me through my PhD, I would say. I listen to it every night. I mean, it sounds so pathetic, but I would take it back and just listen to it.
Sound
and I'm like, how am I going to get out of this? You know, how am I going to finish this program? So it definitely got me through that. I'm really big into Christian pop music. And so Francesca Battistelli, her Be Honest CD is beyond beautiful. And I'll never stop listening to it. So those would be my tops.
Very cool.
Mm-hmm.
If you didn't become a musician, you know, if music wasn't a part of your life, what do you think you would have done instead? Or is it just what the other side of you, the teaching?
Oh, I would have been a professional athlete. That would have been a dream of mine.
Really? What sport?
So probably, I mean, this is dreaming.
It's all right. This is the place to do it. There's like no barriers here on this show.
It would either be snow skiing or water skiing or running. So
that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me something about yourself that people would either be surprised to hear or might find a little odd, Camille.
I did bodybuilding for 3 years.
Did you really?
That's maybe a little odd. I don't know. Or maybe something they wouldn't think of.
What, like powerlifting or actual bodybuilding?
Yeah. So I competed in a couple divisions of bodybuilding. There's fitness and there's figure.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So I competed in figure for one competition and then fitness for a year and a half or so.
You've got to be disciplined.
Oh, well, that's what got me. I mean, that's one more thing that got me through the PhD program. I was competing for two fitness competitions at the same time. And they kind of worked hand in hand because I needed such extreme discipline with my eating.
And diet, yeah.
Out. Yeah. And I was such on an extreme writing discipline as well, just writing my dissertation that they kind of worked hand in hand. That I would train at the gym, 2-3 hours a day, every day, and then have my 7 Tupperwares in the fridge, get on the couch, start writing, and I love sports, absolutely love sports. There's a part of me that I will always just love sports.
Wow, so. That is very cool. Yeah, because I've been training with weights for like 30 years, but and I eat really clean, but yeah. I've never done like a bodybuilding, and I've done cuts, but not a bodybuilding cut because that's like really, really extreme.
Oh yeah. Well, maybe you should think about it.
Right? No, I'm not. You think that's my next, no, I'm just happy to be in the, I'm just happy to be at the gym every day, to be honest with you. You know, when I look on Facebook and I look at, like the shape of the people I went to high school with, I'm just glad I've taken care of myself a little bit, you know, like, just like so grateful, you know, but what's really funny, I was really big and fat when I was a kid. So
really?
Yeah.
You too? I was the same way.
Were you really? That's wild.
Yeah.
So I'm like a reformed smoker when it comes to that stuff, you know, like I am not gaining weight, you know, I'm eating clean and, you know, so like it was my granddaughter's birthday yesterday and like this sounds horrible. Like I didn't have any cake, you know, and look, have some cake. No, I'm good. Thank you. I have no problem doing it. I don't want to eat it, you know, although I did eat a shit ton of pizza when I went to New York. I had to.
And that happens.
Well, that's cool. Good for you. How did you do? How did you place in the show?
You know, there's not a lot of. I think I got third in the figure, and then there's not a lot of fitness competitors, and so I know I got first in one because I was the only one in the division.
That's okay.
And then I think I got third in another one or something. So
that's great. Good for you.
So yeah. Well, thank you.
That's tough.
An amazing thing to train for, and it was a fun thing to do for sure.
Do you still go to the gym?
I do almost every day. I train about probably 4 days a week.
Do you lift or what do you do there?
I lift. Yeah, lifting is the one thing that kind of prevents pain and kind of helps maintain, build muscles so that I don't feel as much pain. Yeah.
So you eat pretty clean then, I would imagine.
I do. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Good for you. That is awesome. Very cool. Happiest moment or time in your life?
Ooh, that is a very good question. Oh, man. I would say, I served a mission for my church in Switzerland, and I was there for 18 months, and I was only there just with one sole purpose of just spreading the good word, you know, mm-hmm. and I remember being extremely happy then, you know, cause I just was, I just lived every day with just such focus and just such discipline. And that I remember being really, really, really happy then. And so I would probably go back to then. Hmm. That was a really good time. Or good time with friends or family. Like those always pop up as well. So, but yeah.
Okay. Most important thing your dad taught you?
Ooh, he taught me so many things. My mom was the dreamer, and she instilled that love and appreciation for music. But my dad really was the one with the whip saying, you know, you've got to practice and everything. And I think he taught me that, you know, you can't just be talented at something. You can't just want to do something and just be natural. You have to work at it. And it's just like anything. Like when people say, oh, you're talented, or you're talented this, I mean, there's so much that goes into that. There's so many years and hours of practice. And so he taught me the discipline of practice for sure. But he's taught me patience. I mean, with a kid like me, and sorry that I think that's the garbage truck or something, but
yes, we're come on. No, let's listen to that garbage truck. Come on.
Yeah. Right. I mean, sweet
music. It sounds so different in Utah than from Florida.
It's like the snow plow. Yeah. No, but my dad just really taught me like such, not only discipline, but he's so patient. And so he was a really, really good example of that. So
discipline and patience. And your mom, you'd say, was the dreamer and the creative inspiration?
Yeah, she was the one who like instilled like a love and appreciation for music all in her family. And then my dad was the one, you know, just making sure that we practiced. And I couldn't go to birthday parties. I couldn't go really anywhere unless I practiced. And so yeah, that was kind of the story there.
Very cool. Is there anything that you're still interested in learning to do?
Oh, you know, there's lots. Yeah, there's lots of things. Gosh. I want to once and for all, I definitely want to learn how to speak Spanish fluently, and I definitely want to get married and have kids. That's like at the top of the list. And
that's like so old school now.
I know, right?
Like nobody gets married anymore. It's so weird. Do you have any hobbies outside of music?
Yeah, I mean,
Fitness, of course.
Yeah, I'm a huge snow skier. Love that. I just bought a townhome 15 minutes away from the mountains from the ski resort, and so from my door to the ski resort, it's just about 15 minutes, almost exactly. So
that's awesome.
So I love that. And
is that where you are right now?
And that's where I am right now.
Very cool.
I love water skiing. Is my number one favorite sport. I love, love, love water skiing. And let's see. I love traveling. I'm a big foodie. I do love eating clean, but I do love eating good food.
What do you like to eat?
Ooh, I love good Italian food, or just really good, just really well-made food, like nice, like really good scallops, or that's one of my favorite foods, really good sushi.
And you're making me hungry now. You're saying all healthy stuff, you know.
I know, like, yeah.
Scallop, but sushi.
I mean, I do love some good pizza for sure.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Yeah.
Two more questions. Just one more, really. What's been the biggest change in your personality over the last 10 years? And how much of that change, Camille, has been deliberate and intentional? And how much has just been like a natural process of aging?
Yeah. Let's see. So 10 years. So that would be 2008. Gosh. So I was just starting. I just finished graduate school. And one thing that's definitely changed about my personality is I feel like I've always been pretty open as far as, but the last 10 years I've lived so many different places, traveled so many places, that I feel like I'm even more open like than I used to be, meaning just, I don't know. I feel like I've always been a pretty friendly person, but I think it's been almost more intentional the last years of just, that's probably just a natural way of living, just being in different places. And so, and probably just being more open and being exposed to more cultures, more diversity. And I would just be saying more open. Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah, but I understand what you're saying, because it's one thing to be open, but there's another thing to be open because you've been exposed to this thing. It's with deliberate, you know, you have a better appreciation of, you know, different is interesting. Again, yeah. You've seen it firsthand. It's not like you watched a documentary.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
that's really cool. Mm-hmm. Hey, first of all, thank you for everything. And I want to tell people about where to find you. But I also know you're involved with SaveOurMonarchs.org. And I was wondering if you wanted to talk about that charity and why you chose to partner with them and anything else you want to talk about.
Yeah, Save Our Monarchs. I mean, monarchs are extinct, and the monarch butterfly. And they provide, not only are they gorgeous, but they provide so many benefits to the environment. And so Save Our Monarchs is really just, they establish themselves just as an organization just to save monarchs. And they set up an organization just to benefit them. So I decided to partner with them to help save monarchs, or just to increase the overall awareness that monarchs are extinct and just the beautiful insects that they are. And so that's why I partnered with them. Again, my mom was Madame Butterfly, and so that's another reason why I chose that charity, and why butterflies mean so much to me, and that it's kind of the symbol that I chose is my artist logo. So yet another reason.
Well, thanks. Let me tell people where they could find you. First of all, it's Camille Nelson. She's a beautiful guitarist, extremely soulful. Check her out. Her website is CamilleNelson.com. I'll spell it for you. It's CamilleNelson. Nelson is normal way you spell Nelson.com. And please check out her CD. You can buy physical copies on her website, or if you want to listen to it, it's on Amazon, Spotify, all the usual places. She also, if you enjoyed this interview, and I certainly did, and you're looking for a keynote speaker on self-confidence, and talk about go to Camille Speaks, Camille Speaks.com, but talk about some of the stuff that you speak on, and like, what do you get out of it? Like, how do you enjoy it?
Yeah, sure. So I talk to corporations about leadership and change and creativity, and then I also speak to universities through an organization called Campus Speak. And I integrate music and all the presentations I do and speak about creativity and leadership and change. And I've really loved it. So
thank you. Oh, check out Camille and Camille Speaks and Campus Speak.
Yeah. So Campus Speak is an organization that I speak through, for universities and colleges. So you can find me there if you need someone to speak at your university event or school event or anything. So
awesome. And Camille gives house concerts if you want to have a private performance. She occasionally tours, and check out her support of monarchs at saveourmonarchs.org, and you can support that directly, I'm assuming, by going to your website and getting the butterfly evolve thing.
And yes. Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
And you can find that all. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Great. Well, thank you for everything. I really appreciate your time. And everybody go out and listen to Camille's music. It's great.
Thank you, Craig. And thanks for having me on the show.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much.
Everybody, thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this interview as much as I did. Thanks again to Camille for spending time with us. I appreciate it. Go to everyonelovesguitar.com and sign up to get notified about future episodes, along with some early product announcements and discounts. And remember that happiness is a choice, so choose wisely. Be nice, go play your guitar, and have some fun. Till next time, peace and love, everybody. I'm out.
We hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, subscribe to the Everyone Loves Guitar podcast, and you can do this online at everyonelovesguitar.com or on iTunes. And if you like the show, please leave us a 5-star positive review. The more 5-star reviews we get, the higher our show ranks, and higher rankings mean we get to continue speaking with cool, interesting guests on our show. We'll see you on the next episode. And until then, keep playing your guitar and have fun making music.